Yesterday, searchers located Brennan Hawkins, the 11-year-old Boy Scout lost in the Utah wilderness for 5 days. Nearly 3,000 volunteers participated in the hunt for Brennan. It was a familiar scene. Helicopters in the sky, men and women on foot, on horseback, on ATVs, all searching. America's wildlands seem to host large-scale searches like this almost every year. If you've participated in one of these efforts, we want to hear from you. What skills are needed to search wilderness area? If you've gotten lost, we're interested in your story, too. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, TOTN at NPR.org. Sheriff David Edmonds of Summit County, Utah, was involved in the search for Brennan and his recovery. He joins us today from his office in Park City, Utah. Good of you to be with us.
Hey, thank you very much. Nice to be here.
How do you organize a team of almost 3,000 people all looking for one lost boy?
Boy, I'll tell you what, it's not easy, and it's certainly not without its potential pitfalls. You know, the 3,000 people, it's important to note on this particular search, and there were some distinctions here that need to be made. You know, the vast majority of the volunteer effort was concentrated, you know, not necessarily being planned by my office. There were volunteers that Kevin Bardsley, who was the father of young Garrett Bardsley, who went missing last summer, He has really taken to this search and rescue and, you know, national incident management type issues, and he's been able to really delve into this, and he organized much of the volunteer search. The search and rescue operators, who are trained individuals that work for sheriff's offices or search and rescue firms, or maybe they have search dogs, things of this nature, we're the ones that coordinated that search. So there was actually two simultaneous searches going on. We knew exactly what they were doing, they knew what we were doing, and we were liaising back and forth, and certainly they were asking us where they would like them to go. So there was a little bit of a distinction there.
Obviously, questions of the terrain, how easy it is to get in and out of the area, all of those things, no two of these would ever be alike.
You know, and that's what's so frustrating about it right there, is they are never alike, and you can have back-to-back searches even within the same week, which happens on occasion, even up here in Utah, and they're nothing like. They're just, you know, you could have the same, you know, types of individuals, a male, you know, 25 years old and within, you know, the same area, and then they do the exact opposite thing. So it's very frustrating in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Is there a question of asking for volunteers, or do people come forward?
You know, a little bit of both. People will spontaneously show up to these events, and there's particularly when there's a large media coverage, as we had in this particular case, people will just show up out of the blue and want to help out of the goodness of their heart. And, you know, bless their soul, a lot of these people, they have all the best intentions in the world, but some of them just have no business doing it because they're not physically fit enough, or they just don't have the ability to get out into this rugged country. But those that can, and they are capable of doing these types of searches, we love to have them, and we can utilize them in many capacities. We have to reserve the real dangerous stuff, like the high angle rescue and any type of swift water rescue, things like that. We have to reserve that for the technical folks, however.
When it's not a child, do you get the same kind of community support?
You know, typically not. I think anytime that there's a child involved, I think that really pulls at the heartstrings a lot more than just an adult out there in the woods. And I think there's a tendency for people to be a little bit callous and say, hey, if it's an adult, they put themselves in that situation. But surprisingly, even with adults, we get a lot more volunteers than you might expect. But, you know, in the case of children, everybody that has children or is around children, I think that there's a special place for children in most people's heart.
As I'm sure you know, Brennan's family said that he avoided searchers because he'd been taught not to talk to strangers. I wonder, is that often a problem?
It can be a problem, and it's something that we considered. You know, with kids, you never know what you're dealing with, particularly kids that have been isolated for an extended period of time. Their psychological, you know, well-being is certainly in question. And when we contacted Brennan, that was definitely the case. You could tell that he was in a situation where he had been through a lot, a tremendous amount of pressure and a lot of you could anguish. You could see it on his face. And we're hoping that everything works out and he's able to get his life back together, which I'm more than sure that he will with the help of his loving family.
All much too often, the outcomes of these stories, especially after all that time, is not good. This a wonderful success story. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. We're pleased that we were able to be a part of bringing him back home to Mom and Dad.
Sheriff Dave Edmonds, the sheriff of Summit County in Utah, joined us from his office in Park City. Thanks very much.
Hey, thank you.
Joining us now to talk about search and rescue operations is James Glaze, a senior editor of Outside Magazine. He joins us from his office in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Good of you to join us.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Can you characterize the type of search and rescue operation that was used to find Brennan?
Well, no, I am not sure that I can, to be honest, because I'm not sure that many details have come out yet specifically along those lines, but I can speak generally about how search and rescue operations get underway and the kinds of people that get involved in those searches.
Well, then, hypothetically, what kind of how do you go about organizing this?
Well, what happens is generally a call comes in, somebody's missing, to basically like an administrative agency that oversees search and rescue operations. In my state, that's the state police. In Colorado, it's the sheriff's office. There's some initial work to confirm that it's a legitimate call, and then what they essentially begin an incident command or a situation. They establish an incident command base, and then they activate the local search and rescue squads, whatever they may be.
Mm-hmm. Where do the volunteers come into it?
Well, volunteers, all the search and rescue squads certainly around here are all volunteer-based. They're not people. They're people that have regular lives, graphic designers, bakers, and they're members of squads, and they train, and they basically are available via pager at a moment's notice, and they come out and they apply their technical skills to help.
Mm-hmm. Now, part of this operation is to, I assume, set up a grid. You guys search over here, we'll search over here. How far could the kid have gotten in X hours since he was last seen?
Well, I think that they were confused, or they were stymied by the fact that where he was found, he'd actually traversed over a mountain ridge to get there. And I think that that's an unusual case. Usually kids, when they're lost, and people when they're lost, they tend to take the path of least resistance. They go downstream, they follow a stream, they follow a valley. This guy decided to really put some serious miles under him, which is, of course, the first rule of what you should not do. Kids, as a rule, the first thing they should be taught is to hug a tree. You know, literally stay in one place, stay put, and that makes your chances of being found so much higher.
We're talking about search and rescue missions. If you've ever been part of one, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, TOTN@npr.org. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get a listener on the line. This is Phil. Phil's with us from Provo, Utah.
How are you doing today?
Okay.
I was involved in the search for Garrett. I actually went up there on Sunday. I have to give a lot of kudos to Sheriff Edmonds and his crew for dealing with 3,000 people in a wilderness situation. I work with, the only reason I got through, they were just turning away everybody. And I had my, I work with an auxiliary to search and rescue, a mountain rescue team that is not the same as Utah County Search and Rescue, but is a offshoot of it.
But you've got skills, in other words, yeah.
I had my coat on, and that got me through the gatekeeper, as it were. And they really didn't know what to do with me, and I didn't spend very much time there. It turned out later they could have used my geo positioning computer that I had with me, and I didn't know they needed that. There wasn't a lot of communication. I think they did a good job, but I will say one thing. I'm an ultramarathon runner, so I get out in the woods a lot, and I also have 7 kids, and I take them out with me a lot. We underestimate grossly, in my opinion, what kids are capable of, especially when adrenaline and panic kicks in. It doesn't surprise me one whit that Brennan got to Lily Lake over a 750-foot ridge to the west of that camp. I think that when you're looking for a kid, you need to establish a much wider perimeter with sweep teams on mechanized vehicles, equestrian, or physically fit SAR people who go out and will go out on trails and then start sweeping back slowly at the same time as implementing a grid. And if you look at Sheriff Edmonds' comments in his press conference, he was kind of floored by how far Brennan got. I wasn't. I mean, I've taken my kids, my 10-year-old kid, to the bottom of the Grand Canyon and back in 8 hours. These kids are amazing. And if they get scared, they'll bolt and they'll go a long way. And I think that's why we lost that young man last year in the UNS, the same mountain range. I don't think that the perimeter was out far enough. And bless everybody, I think we're learning. But I think that that's something we have to consider. I'd be curious to hear what your expert has to say on that.
So would I, James Glaze.
Well, I think that you make a very good point, and that is that you really have to know the victim. You know, you have to know the kid involved. I mean, in this case, yeah, he was a scout. He was fit. He was young. You know, but you have to kind of try and estimate. You have to take a profile of the person as much as the terrain, and I think that's a completely legitimate point. Some kids are very fit. Some kids just aren't that fit, and I think you need to adjust your search grid and your strategy accordingly.
Phil, thanks for the call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Let's talk now with Amy Grace. Amy Grace calling from Flagstaff, Arizona.
Good morning.
Morning.
Or afternoon. I am a Coconino County Sheriff Search and Rescue member. I am a assistant team leader for the mounted unit. I am on the board of directors for the what we call the ground pounders, the general unit, and I'm also ATV certified. And we're actually in the middle of a search now. I'm just south of Flagstaff.
Who's missing?
Miles or so. We have a profoundly deaf woman who has been missing, I believe, since Sunday evening at 5.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been working with the Yavapai County Sheriff Search and Rescue also. We may have called in even more people over the last day or so to help, but we're running out there 24 hours a day.
And from Sunday, you may be running out of time.
Well, we're hoping not. There's fortunately quite a bit of tree cover, so we're hoping that helps keep the heat down, though it's only up in the, barely into the 80s here.
Mm-hmm.
But it does get fairly cool at night, and she is without water or food.
Well, we wish you and your colleagues the best of luck, and the best of luck soon.
Well, thank you. It's quite a community service, and I'm really glad to be able to help and make a difference in somebody's life.
Amy Grace, thanks for the call.
Quite welcome.
James Glaze, in the very few seconds we have left, you mentioned stay in one place. Anything else somebody could do to improve their chances if they're lost?
I think the sheriff there brought up a good point, and that is there's tree cover. I think finding shelter is the number one priority, even if you think you're going to be found soon. The sun will scorch you and cause you a lot of pain, and in winter times, likewise, you need to find warmth. So build a lean-to is really the first step beyond worrying about food and things like that.
Then maybe a fire?
A fire comes next, although that is quite an ambitious project if you haven't been prepared like a Boy Scout and brought along some kind of ignition system or matches.
You can spend a long time rubbing sticks together.
It should be undertaken, yep, for sure.
James Glaze, thanks very much.
You bet.
James Glaze, senior editor of Outside Magazine. He joined us from his office in Santa Fe, New Mexico. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan.